Well, studies do show that there's a link between physical inactivity and cancer. And our guest is heading up a research project that is designed to help cancer patients get more motivated to become physically fit. I'm Larry Mueller, and again, great to have you along on the Ideas Network. My guest, Lisa Cadmus Bertram, is director of the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab. She's an assistant professor in kinesiology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison as well. And great to have her along to talk about what's helping the people here in her study. And maybe those ideas will help you stick with your own exercise goals as well. What keeps you motivated? Has exercise helped you after a cancer diagnosis? I hope you'll join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lisa, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab.
We are housed in the Department of Kinesiology, and we do a variety of different research studies that are all centered around the influence of physical activity on risk for chronic disease or outcomes after a chronic disease diagnosis, such as cancer. And we also do a lot of work with physical activity interventions to help people become more active, primarily after a diagnosis of cancer.
What's the association between physical activity, let's say, and cancer risk and survival?
So physical activity is associated with risk of cancer incidence. That means the chance of getting cancer initially for several diseases, including breast cancer and some other cancers as well. And it's also associated with better outcomes after completion of cancer treatment for breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and other cancers, primarily those that are related either to hormones or to obesity.
And I'm wondering what goes on in the body. I know, you know, I get out and, although I didn't this last week because I was sick the whole week with a miserable cold, but normally I could do 3 miles in the morning and pretty much every morning and always feel better after. I mean, is that part of it? Feeling better?
Yeah, certainly, especially in the context of cancer survivorship. We're interested in the actual physiological influences of cancer on the body and how that might relate to eventual risk of cancer recurrence or mortality. But there's also a huge amount of evidence showing that physical activity is very beneficial for reducing fatigue, for reducing depression and anxiety, and improving quality of life among cancer survivors. Yeah. And those really aren't, sometimes those are considered secondary outcomes, but they're really extraordinarily important to people's day-to-day lives. And we find that, for example, in one of the trials that we have going on right now, we're recruiting patients who have fairly recently completed their primary treatment, so that is their, you know, chemotherapy and or radiation for breast or colorectal cancer. And I think that sometimes after people finish that initial intensive first wave of treatment, it can be really helpful for them to set goals around physical activity or other behavioral goals that help them restore that sense of control over their health, and that can be very beneficial for them as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about you this morning as I was once again not going out because I didn't feel well, and I thought to myself, well, somebody with going through cancer treatments isn't going to feel very well either, and yet they need to get out there. You're saying they need to get out there and do some exercise.
Yeah, and that's one of those challenging things. Physical activity is one of the best things that you can do to reduce fatigue during cancer treatments, but of course it's very hard to do because you're fatigued.
Yeah.
In the studies I have going on now, we're really looking at people who've completed primary treatment. I have done work in the past with cancer patients who are going through treatment at the time, and we just really take kind of a small steps approach and tailor the program to how they're feeling each day. So typically we might have somebody who's able to do a 20 or 30 minute walk one day, and then after they get their next round of chemo, they don't do anything for 3 days. And then we set individual goals. And I had one woman that I was coaching over the phone several years ago, and she had a long driveway, and typically many days during chemotherapy, her goal was to walk to the end of the driveway to her mailbox and back. So it's really about figuring out and understanding where you are and setting some realistic initial goals to just to get moving and kind of take those first steps.
Carol in Madison has a question for us. Let's go there. Carol, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wondered, you're talking about people who are taking cancer treatments, which implies that they might recover, but I have terminal cancer that's metastasized into my bones, but I've been diagnosed over a year ago, and I'm still feeling pretty good, and I'm just wondering, I'm taking palliative care, and I just wondered if any kind of exercise would be a palliative thing to help me. I have a problem that I can't get up when I fall down, and I never had that problem before I was diagnosed.
Hmm. Well, Carol, thank you so much for your call. I'm really glad that you brought this up. This is a very important issue and something I'm really interested in. And I'm sorry to hear about your diagnosis. I know several people have gone through that one, and that's a challenging situation. In our trials, we recruit people who have typically up to stage 3 cancer. So that's people who don't have any what we call distant metastases. So for like example, I know that you said you have metastasis to your bones. And really the reason that that is done is because there's a different set of challenges with people who have advanced disease, and it's one area that I've been extremely interested in and really talking to some clinicians at the Carbone Cancer Center about potentially trying to get some funding to do an initial needs assessment to really talk to people who have stage 4 cancer about how they feel about physical activity, if it's something that they're interested in working on, and what type of support they would like to help them. With that, we do get actually a number of calls to my lab from other patients like yourself who have stage 4 and who are interested in joining the study. So we're really hoping that we can develop something that would meet that need in the community. In terms of the benefits of physical activity for stage 4 cancer, there really isn't a lot of evidence on that. I think it would be certainly going beyond the evidence to suggest that we think that increasing your physical activity is likely to, change the rate at which the cancer might advance. But certainly there's a lot of other things. As I'm sure you know, quality of life is very important. Helping you to maintain your balance, things like that, are things that physical activity could certainly assist with.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Carol, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Barbara in Green Bay, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for calling.
Well, hi. I have, I think, a wonderful story to tell you. I was diagnosed with breast cancer a year ago in January. And it was stage 2, and I went through radiation therapy and finished on May 18th. During my radiation, I had my treatment at Aurora here in Green Bay. They linked me into an exercise program called the Bridges to Wellness, and I had a personal trainer twice a week throughout my treatment, and then I also have continued it since then. And the big emphasis was, again, that exercise is essential for your survival. Now, my history was that I had never been very active in the last 2-3 years because I have a horrible back. So I elected when I finished in May my radiation. On June 22nd, I went ahead and had major back surgery. I had a fusion. And 90 days after my surgery, I walked the 5K for breast cancer awareness.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So thank you.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah,
that's. I couldn't take my granddaughters to the mall to buy them a dress because I couldn't walk. Now I control all my pain by walking.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's a wonderful story, and I think really a nice testimony to how beneficial physical activity can be after cancer treatment. I'm so glad you had access to a program that emphasized physical activity as part of cancer rehabilitation. That really isn't the norm. You're really fortunate to have had access to that. And I would say that that's one of really the driving purposes of our work, is to contribute to that evidence base so that we can get the healthcare system into a place where cancer rehabilitation, including support for physical activity, is the norm for all patients.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Barbara, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Barbara described her program. Tell us about your research. How does it work?
So typically we emphasize programs that help people to increase their physical activity through home-based exercise, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing the exercise within their home, but it's in contrast to a type of program where we would have people come in and exercise in a gym or as part of group. And the reason that we do that is because it's so much more feasible for people to be able to do the activity however they choose, whether it's at a neighborhood gym or out walking outdoors or doing exercise videos inside or riding a bike or anything that they prefer. And then it also really helps us to reach a wider audience of patients. I work with the Carbone Cancer Center, and we really have a pretty wide catchment area. So we have patients coming into our trials who live in northwestern Illinois. We have people coming from an hour, 2 hours away. So we really emphasize promoting the American Cancer Society's physical activity guidelines, which are 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous intensity activity. So that's very similar to the guidelines that you've heard for general health. We're talking about brisk walking or other forms of aerobic exercise that really get your heart rate up and increase your rate of breathing. So that might be a very fast walk. It could be swimming, riding a bike, any type of cardiovascular exercise that really gets you going most days of the week, summing to at least 150 minutes a week.
So, and it can be three times a week for 50 or four times a week for whatever the math is on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a behavioral epidemiologist, and one of the things that we know from the science of behavior change is that in order to make a change in your lifestyle and make it stick, it's really important to, number one, choose something that you enjoy, because if you don't enjoy it, you won't stick with it. And number two, organize it in a way that really makes sense with the rest of your lifestyle. So for some people, that's doing a few bouts a week and they're longer in duration. And for other people who maybe, you know, tend to procrastinate if they know they're scheduled to do 45 minutes or 60 minutes of activity, maybe they would fare better walking for 15 minutes twice a day.
Oh, and that works too. It doesn't have to be all in a row.
In the past, physical activity guidelines really emphasized more vigorous intensity activity for longer bouts. But the most recent guidelines, which came out in 2008, really were updated to reflect the fact that the evidence shows that as long as you're using your physical activity in bouts of 10 minutes or more, there's no evidence to suggest that the bout length actually matters. So you're really free to break it up in the way that works best for you.
Talking today about fighting cancer with exercise with our guest today, Dr. Lisa Cadmus-Bertram, director of the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab and assistant professor of kinesiology at the UW-Madison. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we will be back with her. Stay with us. Talking about ways to stay motivated to exercise and how exercise affects your health, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. And our guest today, Lisa Cadmus-Bertram, director of the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab and an assistant professor of kinesiology at the UW-Madison. She's doing some kind of really cool research, I think, on exercise, especially as it may relate to cancer patients or other folks who are have ailments as well. And maybe if exercise has had an effect on your life, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Is it difficult to get folks who are in that sort of situation motivated?
I actually find that it's not very difficult at all. Typically, once people have gone through a diagnosis of cancer, even if they have a really excellent prognosis, as many non-metastatic patients do, it's a scary experience, and it can be a traumatic experience for a lot of people. And so it tends to be a time when people are very open to making changes to their lifestyle, and we actually find it to be quite an ideal time for intervention. And we find that the patients that enroll in these types of trials are just really lovely to work with.
And what types of work do you have them do? Talk about that a little more.
Yeah, so typically we go through progressive series of goal setting where we teach them about how to track their physical activity. In the old days, we used to use a traditional step counting pedometer, and then we moved more towards websites where they could enter the physical activity that they did online, and now we use the Fitbit or other similar types of fitness trackers that will do the tracking automatically. But we talked to them about the importance of creating that sense of accountability and really tracking your behavior, about setting realistic goals, working towards those goals, reviewing them, and amending them on a frequent basis. And it sounds very, very simple, but those two things, self-monitoring, which just means tracking whether it's exercise or counting calories or anything like that, plus setting goals and reviewing your progress towards your goals, revising your goals frequently, those are the things that evidence shows are most important for successful and lasting behavior change.
Yeah. We were talking about Map My Run during our news break, and I've used that. And the fact that it sets goals, there are, you know, Under Armour and various companies will sponsor little events, and you can keep track for the whole year. You get weekly updates. You know, it really helps with the motivation, for sure. David in Winter, Wisconsin, has something for us. Hi, David.
Hey, good afternoon. I just wanted to share an experience of my cancer over the last year, and two thoughts. First, I would just encourage people to be active, as your guest is proposing. But it happens oftentimes in an atmosphere of very low expectation early on for the cancer patient. And I felt that, I was self-motivated to become active, so I pushed myself into it. But the atmosphere within medical care early on, as I say, is kind of low expectation for a lot of activity, especially dealing with radiation and chemotherapy and the negative effects of that. My second point is that with nutrition emphasis for the cancer patient that needs to, you know, improve their nutritional status after weight loss and all the negative effects, all the side effects of cancer care, it's difficult to take a lot of nutrition, though, and I felt one of the best influences on improving my nutrition was, coincidentally, increased activity. So whereas there's a big emphasis on nutritional improvement, if it was more linked up with increased activity, as your guest is pointing out, I think that would actually help.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that comment, David. What do you think, Dr. Lisa?
I think David makes a great point about the importance of combining physical activity and nutrition after cancer. A lot of times when people imagine somebody going through cancer treatment, they're thinking about wasting or weight loss. And we do see a loss in lean tissue for many patients, particularly because they're not active and your muscles obviously are going to atrophy if you're not using them. But many more patients are actually putting on weight throughout cancer diagnosis and treatment, particularly, you know, patients who have early stage or non-advanced disease. So sort of that combined approach, focusing both on nutrition and physical activity, is a really good way to help people be mindful, as David said, even early on, of how they're doing with their fitness and their body composition, and trying to do the best that they can, given the challenges of treatment, just do the best that they can to maintain their body composition so that their recovery will be easier.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You talked a little bit earlier about potentially exercise being something that could fight off cancer or not lead to you having cancer. Talk a bit more about that.
Yeah. So typically when we talk about cancer, sometimes we talk about it as if it's one thing. But obviously there's many different types of cancer, and they're all different diseases, and they all have different etiologies and different sets of risk factors. So everything that we're talking about today, much of this especially is related to cancer risk, is really specific to certain subtypes of cancer, such as breast cancer, endometrial cancer, potentially colorectal cancer. And really, all of these cancers are associated with obesity. And so anything that helps people to maintain a healthy energy balance and appropriately manage their weight is going to reduce the risk of these cancers. However, there is really mounting epidemiological evidence from large observational cohorts that suggests that even aside from its association with body mass index or obesity, physical activity in itself is likely protective for some of these cancers as well.
Well, it does increase, I don't know, as I mentioned earlier, you just kind of feel better. So there's some chemical things going on in your body that have to be helpful, I would think.
Mm-hmm. So certainly with respect to breast cancer, we know that breast cancer, some of the factors that are tied in with etiology of some breast cancers are things like sex hormones, insulin regulation, chronic inflammation, and physical activity is going to be beneficial for all of those things.
What you mentioned Fitbit, and I mentioned MapMyRun. Are there certain types of devices that work better depending on situation?
I really encourage everyone to try to get in the habit of tracking activity. There are some people who love this and it's like a game, especially if they have a competitive personality or they're very detail oriented. There are other people who find that it doesn't feel natural to them or doesn't suit their personality, or they just hate doing it. But it really is evidence-based. And so I guess my first statement is that I would really encourage everyone to try it in some shape or form. Now, with respect to the specific device or app that you use, I think that most of them are more similar than they are different. We do find that the Fitbit tends to be one of the easiest to use devices. It's also one of the devices that syncs with more different apps and other programs. They really have a lot of connectivity with other companies. So that's primarily what we use in my research studies. MapMyRun, I would say, is probably one of the best apps out there. We have a lot of patients who have already used it or who use it in conjunction with their Fitbit. And despite the name MapMyRun, it's really designed for physical activity tracking. You don't have to be a runner. You don't have to be an athlete. If you are setting a goal to walk 10 minutes two or three times a week, that's still a great app for you.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think Under Armour's new tennis shoes now sync with Fitbits. Have you seen those? I took a look at the price tag. I guess I'm not going to be buying a pair of those for a while, but we may see more of that in the future too.
Yeah, certainly. I think that it's a really rapidly growing area. Fortunately, though, even though it seems like new fitness trackers are coming out all the time, to be honest, the most important features are the same ones that have been there since the beginning. And you can buy, you know, the lowest end Fitbit, I think, is $60. It's still a lot of money, but it's much less expensive than some of the newer models. And it still has, I would say, you know, 99% of the active ingredients as any of the other Fitbits in terms of getting active.
All right. Well, let's go to Bill in Madison then. Bill, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yeah, Larry, I just wanted to comment on the previous caller. David had suggested connecting diet or complementing the diet would complement exercise, and it occurred to me that one of the strong points about exercise is it's something you actually do, whereas diet tends to be something you don't do, like you don't eat a whole lot of ice cream or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to me psychologically powerful, and so the two together would make an especially effective way of forming, you know, changing your lifestyle and so forth.
Interesting point. A comment, Dr. Lisa?
Yeah, thank you, Bill, for that comment. I think that's a really interesting one. Certainly, that's one of the things that, and you really hit it right on the head, that diet, even though there are parts of adopting a healthy diet that are things you have to add, typically adding more fruits and vegetables to your diet, for most people, changing their diet feels mostly like a prohibition on things that they enjoy, so it can be a more negative experience. It's also a behavior change that has to be made with decisions many times throughout the day. So you can exercise once a day, and if you can summon the willpower to get that activity done, you've sort of checked that box, at least you know, in a general sense, whereas diet is something that you have to keep working on throughout the entire day. So for that reason, I think that changing diet, although very important, can be more challenging for some people. However, I'll also add for anyone out there who might be thinking about making behavior change with respect to weight maintenance or weight loss, that typically most of the action in weight loss is related to diet, because you can exercise off 100 or 200 or 300 calories, but you typically can't get the types of calorie deficits that you need with exercise alone, and that's where diet is so important.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Yeah, I look at maybe I burn on 500 calories on my morning activity, 3 miles, and two beers would more than cover that. So but it does make you think more, I think, about that when you see the calories burn. Well, not that many calories. Of course, it adds up over time, but it makes you a little more mindful of what you are eating, I think.
It is very easy to eat back the calories. And certainly, I would say most of my work is done in postmenopausal women. And we find that a lot of women after menopause, their caloric expenditure is actually pretty low. So every calorie counts, and they're able to eat back the calories that they expend through exercise, especially if they're doing walking relatively quickly. So that's not meant to be a discouragement. It's just something to be aware of, and sort of supports the idea of tracking the best you can both diet and activity.
On to Sally in Adams. Hi, Sally. Thanks for calling.
Hi. So glad to speak to you, Larry. I am in 25 years remission from my brain cancer, which I was diagnosed at 12 years old. And even at that point, it was hard for me, for the physical therapist, to wake me up in the morning and we'd go and do something. But I have to say that it is so much easier when you have a peer with you to do it with you. It is much funner and much easier to do in that fashion than just to have one physical therapist and go walking with that one physical therapist every single day. It is easier with other people and everything like that. And I have to say that I really appreciate what your guest is saying and everything like that. It really made a difference in my life. But I also had to say that I had to take it in steps, because I couldn't do it all at one time.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Sally, for calling, and good for you. Dr. Lisa, any comments?
Yeah. So, Sally, first off, congratulations on your long survivorship. That's really wonderful news. And I completely agree with you. I think this is a really important point that we call it social support, but basically having somebody to do something with and somebody to encourage you is very important for people who are trying to get more active. So, for example, in one of our current trials, we actually enroll our cancer patients along with a support partner. So we enroll them in pairs, and they do the intervention together. So they both get Fitbits, they both get goal setting, they both get coaching, and they really work together. Because anything that you have to do in life, you know, when you have somebody else who can walk with you and do that hand in hand with you, it really makes all the difference in the world and can really make the difference, especially for people who don't find exercise to necessarily be inherently enjoyable. Having somebody to do it with can really bring the fun back into that activity.
Yeah, thanks so much. As I go around the neighborhood in the morning, I see probably about half of the people are with somebody, one other person typically, and the rest are on their own.
And that somebody could also be a dog. There's good evidence out there, actually, about the effects of dog ownership on chronic disease risk.
Thanks again, Sally. Let's go to Rick in Madison next. Rick, hello. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I'd just like to throw out a plug for senior ping pong in the Madison area. We have four or five community centers that play senior doubles ping pong, which is, if you've never played, doubles ping pong the way it's supposed to be played, where you're in and out on every shot, it can be a lot of exercise and a lot of fun. And most of the people that play, you know, have tried a lot of alternate forms of exercise, but the friendly competition and just the social get-together of senior ping pong, you know, sort of lets you get your exercise kind of without knowing it. And I also can relate to almost any activity that you do, especially as you get older. You know, you really want to think about stretching, because all it takes is one injury, and all of a sudden you're not in the game anymore.
Yeah. Good comments. What about games?
Yeah, thank you, Rick, for sharing information about that program. And I think that Rick's comment really highlights one of the things that I think is, you know, of the very most importance. Often people ask me what is the best type of activity they should do, or what type of activity I would recommend. And I always, always, always recommend the same type of activity, and that's the type of activity that you enjoy. And so I think it's great to get out there and try different activities. Typically, when people think about exercise, they're thinking about running, they're thinking about biking, they might be thinking about a cardio class at the gym. They're not necessarily thinking about ping pong, but ping pong, bowling, all of these other games can be wonderful ways to stay active, to get fit, to, you know, to meet new people and to stay socially active. And all those things are tied in together and really important.
Lynn in Verona, on to you now. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. I wanted to point out that the notion that the only calories you burn are those calories during your actual exercise is somewhat a myth. The number of calories you burn while you're exercising is more or less irrelevant to the number of calories you will burn, the increased number you will burn, I should say, overall because of a regular exercise program. There are many studies that have shown that regular exercise changes one's metabolism with concern with respect to fat burning. This has a lot to do with the increased muscle mass that you gain when you're exercising, and the fact that muscle will burn more calories than other parts of your body. Therefore, the overall effect of regular exercise has a lot more burning of calories than just what you're doing while you're exercising. So people shouldn't get discouraged by that number that only says 300 or 400 calories on the machine.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's certainly true that focusing only on the number of calories burned during the specific minutes that you're doing an activity is really an oversimplification. And I think that the impact of additional calories burned due to changes in the metabolism or carryover after the exercise ends depends largely also on the sort of the type and intensity and duration of the activity that you're performing. For most people in the United States, especially middle-aged and older people, tend to be fairly inactive. They're fairly sedentary. The vast majority of our caloric expenditure throughout the day comes from our basal metabolic rate rather than from physical activity. So if you're adding in, you know, a 10 or 20-minute walk, you may not be building enough muscle mass to really boost your basal metabolism by a substantial amount. Certainly, obviously, if you're training for a marathon or something of that category, it's going to be a different story there.
And thanks again. Posey on Facebook says that every YMCA offers a program, a LiveStrong program, mm-hmm. free Y membership, a class two times a week, personal coaching and fellowship. Anyone who has ever had a cancer diagnosis is eligible to participate. Great idea.
Yes, great idea. It's a great program. LiveStrong is a great organization. It's really had done a lot for the promotion of exercise in cancer survivors.
Can people still sign up for your research, or is that just ongoing now?
Yes, we actually have two studies that are still enrolling. We have one study that is focused on physical activity, and patients are eligible for that if they are patients at UW Health and have been diagnosed with either breast or colorectal cancer in the past 5 years.
And where do we go to get that information? We have it up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, but what's the website?
You can send an email to bertramlab@education.wisc.edu.
bertramlab@education.wisc.edu.
cancerinstitute.edu, and we can get back to you. We also have a randomized trial for breast cancer survivors who are interested, not necessarily in physical activity, but in reducing the amount of time that they sit during the day. And that's open to women from any healthcare system at any time since diagnosis.
And thank you so much for being with us today. Lisa Cadmus-Bertram from the University of Wisconsin.
Thanks for having me.